Hello, everyone. I'm Jacob Tender, and this is episode 16 of Variable Bitrate. This week, I'm joined by Tyler Sharp. Tyler's been around for quite a while, writing for various alternative music blogs and, most recently, Alternative Press. Now, this past week, Tyler announced that he would be stepping down from his gig as senior news writer after over 2 years at the magazine. Naturally, I immediately wanted to know why he chose to leave the publication he worked so hard to work for, but I thought we should save it for the show. So I think, with any luck, we're about to find out what's going on. Tyler, what's happening?
What's up, man? It's so good to be on the show, finally.
Thank you,
Thanks
man.
For having me.
Absolutely. I'm happy to have you. We haven't been able to talk in quite a while. I think the only time we ever talked in person or on the phone, I think, was Bloodfest. Maybe, was that 2 years ago?
It was, yeah. I was bummed I didn't see you earlier in the day.
I know.
I think we caught each other like towards the afternoon, kind of when things were winding down a little bit.
Yeah, I was actually done. I'd seen all the sets that I wanted to see, and I was waiting for a musician that I was taking back to Ohio to wrap up so we could drive back. And I just so happened to notice you walking by as I was just kind of chilling out in the heat. So it was cool to actually like flag you down and say hello.
Definitely. No, I was so glad you did because I was on a mission. I can't remember what set I was going to see, but I was going somewhere. And you know how those fests are. You got to go when all the sets are lined up next to each other. But yeah, no, I was so glad that you flagged me down and we were able to chat for a minute.
Yeah, especially in that that tiny high school. Like it doesn't seem like you could get lost in there, but you can. So
you can.
Ridiculously easy.
When there's so many kids in there for that fest, it's like, okay, wait.
Which hallway am I in?
Around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they still hosting that fest there?
I believe so. That was actually the only year I've ever been to Bloodfest.
Yeah, me too. I think it was really cool. Like I've never been to a festival in that sort of place. I think in a high school is very punk. I love that. I hope they continue to do that if they have, because that was a cool
Definitely.
Spot. But
Definitely.
Where are you located? Where do you live?
So I live in Northwest Indiana, super small town. It's about, you know, a little less than an hour and a half outside of Chicago.
Okay.
About 2.5 out of Indianapolis. So I'm usually going either to Chicago or down to Indy for shows. But yeah, it's really super small town. I went to a small high school, it's always been small around here. So
it seems to be a common thread with a bunch of us bloggers though. Why do you think that is? Like the small town thing?
I don't know. You know, that's a really good question. I haven't really thought about it that much. But yeah, I guess not a lot of us come from big cities.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just, you know, for me, I know like I can speak growing up. I never really had anyone to talk to mm-hmm. about music. So I think I was more geared toward, you know, the internet and, you know, telling people that actually care about the music that I like.
I think that has to be right. I mean, I wasn't too far away from music venues, but I did live in the middle of a cornfield. But since I wasn't allowed to go to shows for a really long time, like I actually wasn't allowed to go, and I wasn't the kind of rebellious kid that would just, you know, take the car and go anyway. I think the internet was just like the most natural place to talk about the bands that I liked with like-minded people rather than, you know, going to a club and, you know, bumping up next to some other dude that loves Bayside. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. No, I mean, that's the thing. I think that might be the main thing that surrounds it all. And I mean, really for anyone, because if you don't have someone to talk to face to face, I mean, the internet's the next best thing to talk to about, you know, music and finding bands and telling other people about it. So
where did you find yourself talking to people online? Were you a member of the like Absolute Punk forums or were you mostly on Twitter? Like where was your hub?
So I didn't get a Facebook until I never had a MySpace. I got a Facebook, I want to say, when I was maybe like 16 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And all I did was go on there and find band pages to like. Like I would just like band pages. And then I'd go back and through and see, like, that was back when Facebook had this kind of weird thing where if you liked a certain amount of pages, it would like pop up in your friends' news feeds and it would be like Tyler Sharp liked this page and 20 other pages or something like that.
That's funny.
So Yeah. So I would just go on there and try and just find as many bands as humanly possible, because that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to know as much as possible about bands that were out there.
I remember doing that a lot in high school as well. Did you ever create pages for bands that didn't have a Facebook page yet, just so that you could like it?
I didn't.
No?
That's
Oh,
I
shit.
wish I would have thought of that, but no, I didn't.
Now that Facebook has like this handy dandy little section where you can go manage all of the pages that you've made over time,
Right.
I was going through those recently and I found a band page that I'd made for Across the Oceans, I believe is their name. They're based out of Minnesota. It was
Okay.
like a super group sort of collaboration between the Take Cover guys and Jamestown Story.
Oh, really? Yeah, I remember Jamestown Story.
Yeah, like it was a super short-lived project, and I think they only put out like four songs, but I liked them so much that I went to like them on Facebook, but they didn't have a page, so I just made it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. No, if I would have thought of that, I probably would have probably would have done that, but no, I never thought about that. Because usually, like, if a band didn't have a Facebook page and I tried to look them up, it had like Facebook makes those Wikipedia like crossover pages
Yeah.
or something like that. I don't really know what those are called, if
Yeah,
they're
those
called
are still
anything.
weird because those still pop up for certain things.
Right, yeah. I was always confused by them, and I was always like, gosh, I'm gonna look until I find the actual page. But
Right.
if I couldn't find it, I just like that page.
So, not having a MySpace, I reckon you had to have been the first person hired at Alternative Press that didn't have a MySpace.
That's a good another thing I never actually thought about. I mean, I could be. That would line up. Yeah, I just never had. So like growing up, I didn't have dial or I had dial-up internet out
Yeah.
here. And I never had like, high speed or broadband or anything. So the only time I could look up bands is when we had like maybe some free time in the computer lab at school
Yeah.
or something like that. So literally the main thing that I had when I super got into, like music and heavy music in this underground scene was Alternative Press. Like I subscribed to the magazine
Oh,
and
cool.
I would every month I would just tear those things apart and read every word that was in every issue, just trying to learn more about the bands that I listened to and find bands that I didn't know about yet.
That's
So
kind of
yeah.
awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, that was definitely like AP was huge for me growing up because it gave me like I didn't have the internet at home. So when I did bother to try and get on our dial-up internet, I would just look up Wikipedia pages for bands and be
Right.
like, okay, what are they doing next?
Yeah,
Because so and like try and memorize their history. I would do that for Under Oath and just bands that I grew up listening to that were like that.
that's what I was going to ask. What bands were you actually into at the time?
So back then, like the first CD I ever got was Green Day's American Idiot.
Oh, dude.
But that was the first band that I liked. The first band that I loved was Under Oath, for sure.
Yeah.
And then that got me into the whole Solid State and Tooth and Nail scene. And those were the first bands that, I truly fell in love with and connected with. So, I mean, Under Oath, The Chariot, Norma Jean,
Yeah.
As Cities Burn, all those bands.
That's awesome. Good stuff. And this was like what about what year was this? I'm trying to establish your timeline because I don't
Yeah.
actually know how old you are.
So I am 21 right now.
Okay. All right. I gotcha.
Yeah. I'm actually going to turn 22 at the end of this month. So
Nice.
got that coming up. But around that time, I was in middle school. Like the first time I listened to Under Oath was, I want to say, sixth grade. But it wasn't like it took a little bit for the snowball to get rolling there. As I would listen to that band and I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Like, this is so good. There has to be other bands out there like that. But I didn't really have anything to like actively on a day-to-day basis look up bands. So
Yeah.
I just had the records that I'd go out and buy and that was kind of it.
I remember getting really into System of a Down in sixth grade.
That's awesome.
American Idiot was like my intro to like the punk stuff, and then I
Yeah.
was like, okay, System of a Down, that's my new thing. But yeah. I couldn't, like, I also had dial-up at home, so I couldn't download anything at home. So at school, the only thing that I could get to because of the content blockers was this website called Songfish. It was essentially a search engine for MP3s that were just stored on servers all around.
Really?
Yeah, it was really cool.
Wow, and I've never even heard of that.
Well, that's because AOL bought it out and then shut it down.
Okay.
They incorporated a bunch of stuff in their own search, and it wasn't as good. That was the kind of the way that I was able to find things when, you know, it was either there or at the library, the public library. That's how I was digging stuff up, getting CDs and all that jazz.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really started expanding my music, library or whatever you want to call it, at the beginning of eighth grade. You know, that was when I started dressing, I think I bought my first pair of skinny jeans and, I started growing my hair out. And that was when everything really started for me, and it started snowballing a whole lot quicker. And then I found AP and all these other magazines and stuff. And I would go to Barnes and Noble and just read as much as I could about them.
So you're reading a lot at this point. When did you start writing?
I didn't start writing until, end of junior year in high school.
Okay.
That was when I started the scene as we know it. And it was just like, it was really hard for me because all I wanted to do was just write on that little blog website.
Yeah.
But I had, I had school, and I was really like, at that point I was really focused on my grades, and I started it, I want to say, maybe, I'm pretty sure I started at the end, in January of that year.
Mm-hmm.
So January 2012, I believe, if I have my years right. But I didn't really start like diving into it until that summer. Mm-hmm. I was just putting up random posts about, just like anything that interested me that I thought maybe would interest others too.
Yeah.
So they were just like kind of longer, not think pieces. They were just like kind of poorly written together journal entries, I guess.
Yeah, man. That's how I started too. It's like, it's funny to think about this after, having so many of you guys on the show, people like me who were, blogging in 2012, 2011 about alternative music, just on like things that they just, popped up. Like these were far from legitimate websites. These were just like far off blogs that, maybe somebody might read if you shared it on like Twitter or Facebook, but there was no like major marketing plan. There was really no plan for these kinds of things. But I think it's interesting now that we're able to come around and talk about these projects that we had in high school so far removed. Because we were all out there doing the exact same thing, and then we all ended up in, relatively the same place. I think it's just it's fascinating to look back and just see how many other people were doing the same thing that I was. I love it.
Definitely. Yeah, so do I. And we were all in different, none of us really knew each other.
Right. I mean, geographically, we couldn't be in more different places.
Right. Exactly. So it is cool, definitely, to see how all paths connect and cross through. That's awesome.
When did you hook up with the Mind Equals Blown guys?
So that wasn't until the next year. I did a little bit over a year of The Scene As We Know It. And during that time, I wrote reviews for Property of Zach for just a random amount of months. Michael McCarran.
Yeah, Mies.
Michael Mies. He found me on WordPress. He had a website called Don't Leave Town Gavin.
Yeah, it's a good blog.
It was. I read that a lot. I remember, I'm trying to think back at some of the posts. I think him and I both posted about an anchor in Braille, something Stephen Christian was doing with that at the time. The issues and Woe Is Me, the first issue song, and then the Woe Is Me, like they dropped those call out tracks on that one night. I think we both had posts up about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, he found me there, and I mean, he got me in at Property of Zach. I owe so much to him. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I was talking to him this morning. I love that guy.
I do too. He's such a good guy.
He is. I agree. So you're right. My nickel's blown more than Property Zach, right? POZ was just some, what were we doing there? Like reviews or features?
Yeah, I was basically their metalcore reviewer.
Nice.
Yeah. So I did heavier stuff. Did like a Miss May I. I think that was At Heart. Word Alive, Life Cycles. I think I actually did Collide with the Sky by Pierce the Veil. And I think like Sleeping with Sirens acoustic EP. Then some I think I did the Chariots last album, One Wing, which was really cool for me. But
so yeah. Heavy is very much your thing.
Okay. I've always been like, I listen to everything now, basically. Like my musical tastes have grown, but if I have to like, if I gravitate towards a certain genre, it's definitely heavy music.
Mark said that you taught him everything that he knows about heavy music.
I don't know about that. I do remember him and I will bring up a the time where I taught him what a breakdown was.
Yeah, that's what he meant. Yeah, that's what he brought up on the show. Yeah, that was a funny moment. That's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was if I don't quote me on this, but I think it was Of Mice and Men's Ohio Is on Fire off the Flood.
Nice.
I think it was that song. But yeah, it's just funny things to look back on. Yeah. You know? And we were totally serious about it too.
Now, were you writing about the same kind of stuff for My Nickel's Blown?
Pretty much. That was, I'm trying to think back. I wrote, like, I had a bit of a trial period, and I just kind of wrote some, like, a couple of listicles maybe for him, just about some random stuff that I was into. Mm-hmm. And then so that was my senior year of high school. And I played baseball from when I was in kindergarten to when I graduated high school. So like a good 13 years.
Yeah.
So every spring that was like, that took up a lot of my time. So I didn't really shut down the scene as we know it. I just kind of let it die. Just kind of stopped one day.
Yeah.
Like I knew for me, but I didn't know if it was like necessary. Like it didn't have a massive following or anything. So I just kind of let it be.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I wrote some random stuff to get in, and then when I got in, I'm trying to remember.
Oh, it's hard to think back that far, man. I mean, this was what, like, at this point it was like 2013, 2014?
Yeah, it was spring, end of winter, spring of 2013.
Okay.
So, I think when school ended, I went full out on news for them.
Okay, so you were doing news.
Yeah, like that's what I did at the scene as we know it. Like all day, every day.
Yeah, the grind.
Yeah. It was I remember because at the scene as we know it, the school I was at, you know, had the blockers and stuff like that. So I would spend a lot of my time at school trying to find out ways to get around the blockers.
Yeah. Yeah. Proxies and trying to get passwords from the teachers
and sending them through all that. And, I ended up talking to one of the, administrators at the school and they unblocked my website for me.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was really cool. But like the theme or whatever wouldn't go through. So it just looked like it was a deep web.
Oh, they probably had some like weird CSS element blocker in there that screwed it all up.
And I was just like, you know what? It's totally fine. I appreciate, you know, you doing it. The thought for sure.
See, I would never have thought to go to an actual administrator to do that for me. I just did it myself. And the administrators were the ones calling me down to their office.
Yep. Yeah. Like I would bring, you know, certain different things to try and get around it. Like I'd bring different devices and it would pop up on their things and I would get called down and they're like, what are you doing? You know?
Well, my big moment was, I actually put a proxy on the school website. I learned how to, you know, create my own proxy, and I didn't have a server, but I did happen to have access to the FFA portion of the school's actual website. So I just uploaded a proxy to their server and I hit it on a page. And the only way you could get that to that page was through a hyperlink on another page that was public. And that hyperlink was attached to a period. So if you knew the exact period to click on,
it
would take you to a proxy that was hosted on the school site so it wouldn't get blocked.
Yeah. That is crazy.
I never got found out.
I never did anything like that. But no, I did try and find ways around it. And I found out that, because Google Reader was still up.
Yeah.
And that was my, you know, that was pretty much everyone's RSS feed back then.
Yeah.
But I found out that, like, if I can open up a story on Google Reader, the YouTube embed would be unblocked.
Nice.
So I could watch, like, because YouTube was blocked.
Yeah, the website itself. Yeah.
But yeah, the videos would all be unblocked. So, you know, even though I couldn't post about the news on my website during the day, I would, like, find the videos and draft posts on a Word document just all throughout the day. And I'd have like anywhere between 10 to 20 news posts, like drafted on a document throughout the day. And then at the end of every day, I would email it to myself and then run home and just post for like an hour straight. It wasn't like doing anything, but I felt like I was doing something.
That's brilliant, man. That's great. When I first started with my blog, and I was writing for another blog at the time that I won't mention, I would have, essentially it's like auto replacements. You know how you can do it on like iPhone, or if you have text expander, you can, you know, type in a series of keys and then when you hit space, it'll expand into something else, you know, usually like a more complex string. So you could do like, you know, for example, TY would expand into thank you. Well,
okay, yeah.
I would type in like album one and then hit space and it would expand into this like album announcement template. So I would just had to plug in the name of the album, the band name, like the track names and stuff like that. And like, you know, put a couple of hyperlinks in there. I did this all for my BlackBerry. So I would just write drafts for my BlackBerry and do the exact same thing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's crazy. I went through a long period of not having a cell phone.
Yeah.
So like when I was running my blog, I didn't have a phone. And when I did, it was like a flip phone, you know.
Yeah.
It was nothing like I had my first phone in eighth grade and all of them were through, what's it called? Track, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
My dad still uses a track phone, believe it or not.
Okay. When I continuously had a phone, was able to afford it, all I did was move over to Straight Talk. So literally to this day, I still have phone cards.
That's awesome.
That I use every month.
Yep. But yeah, my dad's the same way. He loves it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really convenient for me. So, but, yeah, so I didn't have a phone back then, so it was all, like, I had to have a computer on me.
Yeah.
But later on, I did figure out how to work stuff from phones that were capable of it. So, that's awesome.
It was the exact opposite situation here. We had a computer. It was, like, an old 2003 Dell, and it had dial-up still, because we lived out in the country, and we had no other option. So my only access to, like, you know, quick internet was through, you know, the 3G coverage that the BlackBerry that I bought with cash was, you know, I was working at a farm. I was making cash every day and I went into the AT&T store and said, I would like one smartphone, please. And they gave me, BlackBerry Torch or whatever it was at the time. And that's how I did absolutely everything to start. When I started it under the gun, I was still exclusively working from a BlackBerry.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I missed those days, man. That machine was a workhorse. I could do so much.
I bet. Yeah, no, I bet.
I wrote papers driving to school from home. Like on weekends, I'd go home and I'd be like, oh, shit, I forgot to write that paper. So I would write the paper while driving back. Terrible idea. Kids, don't do this.
But there were
physical keys, so I didn't have to like look at the phone because I knew what keys I was hitting. I can't do that now on an iPhone, but then it was super easy. I miss that thing.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. I had a – it was a straight talk phone, but it was like – you turn it to the side and you kind of slid it up and it had like a, you know, like a laptop keyboard on it.
Yeah. So was that like a Sidekick or an Envy or something?
It wasn't, it was like Straight Talk's version of
it.
I don't really know what it was called. It was kind of thick, but it was small and I really actually like that phone and I do miss it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it had like jelly keys on it so I could, you know, send massive texts and just not even look at it while I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was actually thinking about that recently, you know, like with iPhones and stuff, you can't do that anymore.
You can't. And Ryan Seacrest, he was working on some company or at least like fronting money for this company that essentially made a case that goes around your iPhone that has BlackBerry keys on it. And then they were sued by BlackBerry's company. So they had to reiterate it and remake it so that it didn't use any of their patents. And then they came out with the second version of it and nobody bought it, so it folded.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I never heard about that.
It was called the Typo 2. It was great. I wish I could have got one, like, just to try, but it worked via Bluetooth and not lightning.
Okay.
So it was like a huge battery drain.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the trade-off if you want tactile keys, I guess.
Right. For sure.
All right, man. So you did the Mind Equals Blown thing for quite a while. And at some point, an opportunity came up at Alternative Press, right?
Yeah.
So walk me through that.
Yeah, I did the Mind Equals Blown thing almost all the way through my first year at college.
Uh-huh.
And that summer before that. And I just ran news all the time. I did take when my freshman year at college started, I did take, like, I wasn't running news 24/7 like I had been.
Right.
Just because... like,
class.
I had no idea what to expect from college.
Yeah.
And, like,
where did you go?
I go, right now, I'm still going to, it's called Purdue University Northwest. It's like an off-campus of the main one in Indiana. So I'm still going there right now. But, so I didn't, like, completely step away from it, but it wasn't as constant as I was when school started.
Yeah.
And then, like, that December, maybe, late November, early December, I was like, I miss it so much. I have to like dive back into this like as hard as I can or else I'm going to drive myself crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I dove back into it as hard as I could. And I was like running news nonstop as I was before. I go through the holidays doing it. And then you go through the end of the winter. And then I was like, okay, I think my time here has come to an end. I was just, you know, I was ready for something new.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
So I let everyone know and then I stepped away and I actually took a month off from any type of, I was getting like internally, I was kind of trying to figure out what my next move was going to be.
Sure.
But I wanted to focus on the end of the semester because I wanted to, you know, finish that and then just get to summer and we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, hold on. You could edit this out. My computer's going to die. I gotta find my charger.
A few moments later.
Okay. Everything's good.
Sweet.
Sorry about that.
Dude, that happens to me all the time. I'm usually up here in my office, but sometimes I'll sneak downstairs and sit on the couch while my girlfriend's watching TV just to, you know, spend time. And the same thing will happen to me while I'm in the middle of like a really giant post or a Photoshop edit project. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yep. Okay. You just want me to jump back in then?
Yeah. So you took a month off.
Yeah. So I was finishing school and just because I wanted to focus on my grades and make sure I finished the semester strong. But I reached out to Cassie Witt, who was the head of AP's online department at that time.
Yeah.
She was like in charge of news and exclusives and stuff like that. So all I did was reach out and ask her for some advice. because I knew that she was experienced, and she, you know, she knew what was going on and with all the blogs and stuff like that.
Now, did you know Cassie before, or was this just like completely unsolicited? Just like, hey, here's an email.
No, yeah, this was completely random. I don't, like, I had never talked to her before.
Okay.
So yeah, I wasn't like, I wasn't expecting a response back. It was just kind of like this random thing, you know, just kind of did it on a whim. And all I did was ask her for advice because I didn't know what was going to be too big of a step or what was going to be like too small of a step. Like I needed to know, or I wanted to know what, like, what was considered appropriate, you know, from Mine Equals Blown, what was next after that.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, I reached out and she was like, she was really nice. And she said, something along the lines of, why don't you send me over your resume? And so I did, and some time went by and I followed up, and, Drew, who runs Mine Equals Blown.
Yes. Drew Marie.
He actually sent over a, kind of like a, I asked him if he could send over like a letter of recommendation for me.
Nice.
Over there. So, he sent that over. He was like so cool about it. And he did it like no problem. Mm-hmm. And I still appreciate that to this day so much.
That's a cool thing to do. Over.
Yeah. And he sent that over. I like timed it out. It was like, I was like, can you send it over at 9 a.m. when I send this over? Because I was like, beginning of the day, I think it was on a Monday.
Uh-huh.
I was like timing it out. I was like, what's the most opportune time that they're going to be checking their emails? Mm-hmm. Like, when should I send this over, you know? So I planned that all out, got it all sent over. And long story short, they offered me a trial period.
Okay.
Where I was just going to post news. And then, you know, we were going to see how everything worked and see how I could deal with the back end of the website and posting stories and how often that was. Mm-hmm. And,
was this paid, or was this before offer, like a job offer?
Yeah, this was before all of that. So this was just like a strict trial period. So yeah, and they obviously thought I was doing something right. So they offered me a job as a news poster.
Mm-hmm.
And I just took it and ran with it.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was stoked when you got it. I was, you know, there was a period of, I guess it was around that same time. It must have been maybe the year or so before up to the point that you got there. I had a lot of friends that were going in and out of All Press. My friend Matt Caldwell was doing the online news thing for a while, and then he left, and then Cassie came in, and then you went in there. And it was just like, there was a lot of movement there at the time. But when I, you know, I heard that you got in there, knowing how consistently, you know, you're producing content for Mind Equals Blown, I'm like, okay, good. They got somebody solid. You know what I mean? Like they've had a lot of news posters over the years who don't last that long. So I don't know if it's just because I knew who you were, but I was like, okay, good. They're all set. You know what I mean?
Well, that means a lot to me, man. I appreciate that. I never, like, I don't know, doing all the blog stuff, like posting constantly on Mind Equals Blown and the scene as we know it. Like back then it never really occurred to me who might be watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just kind of did it because I really enjoyed it, and it almost became like just this clockwork thing that I did.
See, that's the best period, I think. I think that's kind of like it's like the honeymoon period for a lot of at least bloggers in our racket, because you're doing it for you. You know, you're doing it because you enjoy it. And then at a certain point, I think a lot of people get caught up in either the monotony or, you know, like the where am I going with this sort of thing. And that's where people start to take breaks, or they start to get frustrated because, you know, it is monotonous. You're just essentially writing more or less the same things every day if you're doing news, and that gets kind of old. And if you're doing criticism, sometimes that can get a little old as well. But there's that sweet spot right before you hit that, and you're like, you're putting out tons of content all the time, and like you're just putting stuff out there. And I think that's when a lot of people take notice. So it's always saddening when like people, you know, hit that rough spot after that, and then they drop out completely, when really like they're on to something, and like people are starting to notice, and that's when you can take that next step. And I'm glad that at least for you, you were able to, you know, step it up and move up to the big leagues, I guess, with Alternative Press.
Yeah, like it was a dream come true. Like, I never thought that would happen, you know? Because going into college, I was like, I didn't really know what I was going to do. So before college started that summer, I was like, okay, my goal when I graduate is to work at AP.
Yeah.
Like, that was my goal. And to have it, like, I ran my first story at AP the first day of summer after my freshman year.
That's a cool feeling.
So it was just like I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, when am I going to wake up? But no, I just took it and like, I don't know. It, like, you talk about the honeymoon period and there's different, like, when I look back, there's different things that I loved about every site that I wrote for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of the most fun times I've had doing this is like on The Scene As We Know It. I premiered a song for a band on Christmas Eve one year at midnight. And like, that was the coolest thing to me, you know, like setting that up. And even though like it's Christmas Eve and nobody's on the internet, you know, like I know that now, but back then it was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, you know, cause
yeah,
I don't know. I have that weird thing where I was like stuff with like holidays and stuff like that. And, I don't know. I'd always run news on whatever site I was at, like Christmas Eve, Christmas Day.
Really?
Just down. Yeah, like I did it at AP and I did it at Mind Equals Blown and The Scene As We Know It. And I don't know why. Like, I just enjoyed doing it. It's not like I've, you know, I love the holidays and I think it's a great time, but I just always loved getting on the internet. Maybe it's because not a lot of people are on the internet during that time. But
it's kind of like a
really
quiet space where you can be alone on the internet.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I always enjoyed that.
So,
but
how long were you a news writer before you got the little promotion to senior news writer?
It was just over a year.
Okay.
So yeah, so like I started off and I ran everything I could possibly run as far as like a news post goes.
I mean, half the time when I was going to the site, it was something you wrote. So that, yeah. I think that speaks to just how much content you're putting out there.
Yeah, it was getting pretty crazy at some points, but like no one ever told me I was doing anything wrong. So.
I don't think they can. I mean, if you're doing your job that well, I don't think they can argue about anything you're doing, right?
I guess like nobody ever said anything to me and they always were really excited when I got to like talk to them on the phone or on calls and stuff. Mm-hmm. So
who were you talking to on the phone?
I would usually talk to Cassie.
Okay.
Because she was still in charge of all the news and stuff at that point. She's since like moved on to APTV.
Right.
And more video content. But yeah, so I mean, I was posting altogether, like I tallied it up before I left, and I've posted over 4,300 stories on AP.
Wow.
In less than 2.5 years.
That's nuts, man.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And then I went even farther, and I think over like the course of the three main websites that I've posted news at, I think I'm around 8,000 stories.
Dude. That's nuts.
It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, I like looking at the numbers I'm under the gun. James's numbers are absolutely nuts. Like, seriously crazy. They're just as nuts as yours. You guys are insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's just, I don't want to use the word addicted because, like, I don't know. It's kind of a...
Well, you can get a rush from it, you know?
Oh, my gosh, man. Like, it sounds so lame, but some of the funnest times I've had throughout high school and now college is running these stories.
Yeah.
Like, running out of class and putting up a story for Tom DeLonge leaving or getting kicked out of Blink 182.
Yeah.
You know, I ran that sitting down in this muddy, like it was the middle of January or towards the end of January. And I ran out of class and just found the nearest outlet in a wall. Mm-hmm. And I plugged my computer in and like, I just sat down in this muddy hallway and ran this story, like with just people walking all around me and stuff.
That's so funny. Like looking back at that now, I remember, you know, doing so many of the same things you're talking about. It's taking me back and not necessarily in a great way. Cause I'm thinking like, you know, maybe the reason I didn't have many girlfriends in high school was because I was just pulling out my BlackBerry while, you know, I was hanging out with a bunch of people and just writing blog posts.
Yeah.
You know, cause I had that same rush. It's that feeling of being a part of it. You know, it's being a part of something that really you're not a part of, but you're reporting on these things that people are doing or people are saying, and like, you know, bands breaking up and people leaving bands and new albums being announced and new supergroups coming into fruition. Like these are exciting to you. And you think, well, I got to put this out there cause everybody's going to be like stoked that this is happening. I got to make sure everybody knows about it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It was that feeling. That was like a crazy time. It makes me feel like really good to think about that. But then thinking about, you know, how that turned out later is just like, man, there was a period where I really loved doing that thing. And then it just, why did it turn so sour? You know?
Yeah. I think it's really easy to get burned out.
Yeah.
Like I learned so much about what I did at AP and just news posting and writing in general from watching Zach Zerillo run Property of Zach.
Yeah.
Like after I left and, you know, he was, or after I wasn't a part of POZ anymore, you know, I would literally, you know, just watch that website.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out like throughout the night, you know, there wasn't a period of more than 6 hours when there wasn't something happening with that website.
Right. I don't know how you did it. I honestly, throughout college, I don't know when that kid slept.
It was just like, he honestly, just watching him work inspired me. Like when he broke the Fall Out Boy news, I was like, I have to turn the scene as we know it into this. Like I want to be at that point to be able to do something in my life like that.
Yeah.
So no, like watching him and the way he posted, and I know, you know, it was a headline and a sentence and an embed, and that was it.
Yep.
But that's what kids want.
I know. Isn't it crazy?
It's just like, you know, attention spans are small in today's world. I think everyone's is really. And when it comes to news like that, if a band releases a new song, give them the song. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't necessarily want to know what you think about it.
I think that was the realization of that was part of the decline for me. I mean, it was like,
really?
Well, yeah, I mean, Under the Gun, and you know, I think Binnacles Blown falls into this too. We were really focused on the long form, you know, even if it was just
definitely
a simple single, we wanted to talk about it. We wanted to have some sort of opinion on it and, you know, contribute something to the world based on that work. But then you'd see, you know, you'd see your numbers rising, but then Property as acts are rising faster. Because he's getting more shares on Tumblr dashboards, and it's just like, you know, it's a quick hit, and you're like, man, I wrote 7,000 words this week, like, you know.
Yep.
That's a bummer.
And I think that's where I separated. You know, I went on Zach's side. Maybe it's because I learned from watching him work.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, I felt like I could contribute to a conversation by simply presenting it and not offering my two cents, even though I did put my two cents in sometimes.
Now, this was at AltPress?
No, well, this was just really like Seen as We Know It, Mind Equals Blown. Like I was just churning out news nonstop. When I got to AP, I was really like, I tried to be as professional as possible.
Of course.
Like when I first started, because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make a good impression. So everything, like nothing was opinionated. It wasn't, you know, it had no twists in the story or anything like that. It was just, here's what this is. Talk about it yourselves, you know, kind of like that. And it fit in with my mentality of what I was doing in the first place. So that's how AP started for me. Yeah. And then like there was a change in the wind, you know. Towards the fall of 2014, I want to say.
Okay.
Matt Crane, who I learned the most from him.
Okay.
I don't know if you know him. He was he helped Cassie out when she was the head news online department, and then when she moved to APTV, he became the web editor for AP?
Yeah, he's the one that brought me on as a columnist.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so you know him.
Yeah.
I've learned pretty much everything that I know that I applied at AP post, you know, Zach watching him work was from that.
Mm-hmm.
Headline structure, post structure, you know, creating incentive to click for readers and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned it all just from watching him work. And it was around the fall of 2014 where all these sites wanted to post news nonstop because they saw what Property of Zach was doing and it worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked for Property of Zach because even the articles that didn't get pushed to Facebook were getting not only from Twitter, but the fact that that the website was on a social media platform.
Right. I mean, that's so many hits were coming from exactly. That dashboard.
Just from not posting it anywhere, just posting it in general. You know, it wasn't this outside source website.
Right.
So there was definitely things changed, I think. And it was more of, okay, what stories do people really care about?
Mm.
And so, you know, we were, I think it's important to, for a website like AP to be this massive documentarian, kind of historical, like, you know, I love websites like that. Like, yeah. You go on Lambgoat's archives and the PRP's archives, you know, they've been around for like 15 years.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm doing research on stuff and looking up old tour routings and stuff like that, I always end up at those websites.
Because they're still around.
And they posted about these tours in 2002.
Yeah.
You know? It's just like, I think that is the coolest thing.
Yeah, and then, honestly, for me at least, the biggest source of that sort of information was Absolute Punk, and all of that is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, that was over a decade's worth of tour information and announcements and like exclusive statements from bands on certain things. And unless somebody copied that and put that on their own blog, or you can happen to dig that up on archive.org, it's gone. It's no longer mm-hmm. there. And that's a lot of information.
I know, to just be gone.
Exactly.
You know, like, I was even recently, like, I'll go on Wikipedia pages and see Absolute Punk sources down at the bottom. And, you know, it just leads to the homepage now.
Yeah, goes of course. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
this has come up on the show quite a few times. I mean, like, it's, you know, as we go on in our careers, the blogs that we wrote for die. And the funny thing is, most of the blogs that we wrote for that still exist are most of the blogs that still exist are the WordPress blogs or the Tumblr blogs, because they're still hosted by a company that is doing well. They're not self-hosted because when it's self-hosted and we decide to let it go, those things fade away. Like, James is still paying to keep Under the Gun active. Otherwise, all of that would be gone too. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep.
It's nuts. Yeah,
it bums me out to think about it, honestly, because how much work and time and effort. And like, I feel like my writing style is a lot of like kind of chronologically, you know, historical.
Mm-hmm.
This band member used to be in this band. They used to play in this band. They were on this label.
Right.
You know, I'll go through basically their whole history if a member was in different bands.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think that's so cool.
Oh, I agree. I think we're very like-minded in that way, and I plan on writing a book.
Cool. So I will definitely read that book. But, I love it. And, you know, like, it bums me out when there's bands out there that I get it. You know, you're not going to appreciate every moment of your past.
Yeah.
But
it should,
you know,
it should still be documented.
Right, yeah. And those band, like, there's a good chance what you did back then made an impact on someone,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it should be appreciated in that way.
Yeah.
Like, for the longest time, for example, and I still think, you know, there's still some kind of, not negativity there, but, you know, with Under Oath and They're Only Chasing Safety.
Yeah.
You know, like, they look back on that album, and it's like, it's not a complicated album instrumentally. Musically or anything like that, but it was massive, you know.
It's my favorite
it changed my life.
Yeah.
And it did that for so many other people. And I'm glad that, you know, with the reunion tour and them playing it in full, I feel like they themselves have a newfound appreciation for that record.
Yeah.
So I wish more bands and more musicians would look back on their past and at least appreciate it for what it was.
Mm. Yeah. But, you know, I've always been the kind of guy that saves demos, saves, you know, like one-offs and acoustic yep. recordings from YouTube videos. Like I catalog all of that on my own hard drive because those things disappear. And
right.
I mean, anybody who listens to this show knows that and knows that I have a pretty decent collection of, you know, stuff that bands don't even have anymore. But I've been going through a bunch of old stuff on Pure Volume and pulling it down because I actually, after the recording with Nate Sirota. He used to be in a couple of pop punk bands back in LA, and I was like, okay, well, I need to make sure that I have all of this. And I went through my archive, and I'm like, okay, I have some of these songs, but I can see that there are two more. So I go and look for them, and I was able to find one of them. But the other one, which was listed on Pure Volume, and you could still hit the play button and everything, it wouldn't play because the file is gone. Like, it's just no longer hosted on the server because at some point Pure Volume did a purge of stuff that hasn't been played in years. And it's just gone.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's now that I know that, like, I'm going through Pure Volume and I'm trying to pull down any demos that I can. I'm trying to go to MySpace and do the same thing, but it's the same story there. All the tracks are still listed there. Like, the database says that it's there, but, you know, the file that database entry points to is no longer active. So it's kind of a drag. It's like pieces of music are disappearing. They're just going away. Yeah. They're dying.
Yep.
And this is stuff that's only been, you know, made in the past 10 years. Like, we can still find, like, rare recordings of Duke Ellington or Nat King Cole on, you know, old Victrola records. But bands that started recording in 2004 are losing access to this music because, you know, their computers are gone and, like, the only active versions of those recordings are online and then those get wiped. It's...
Yeah,
it's weird and it's like really it's kind of sad, so I'm like scrambling to download as much as I can.
Yeah, that's it bums me out, but it's also really interesting that you mentioned that because I was on Pure Volume not too long ago. So before Under Oath really solidified their lineup, they went through a lot of members. They released two kind of like black metal records almost.
Yeah.
With kind of almost rotating members, and then they released The Changing of Times.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember specifically what member it was, but he went off. A bunch of those other members formed different bands after Under Oath.
Yeah.
One of them was called Kicked Out Heel Drag. And if I remember correctly, I should know this, and I apologize if I'm wrong, but I believe he formed that band, this ex-member of Under Oath formed that band with a member of Further Seems Forever and Amberlin.
Okay.
But I could be wrong about the Amberlin.
That sounds interesting.
I'm almost for certain about Further Seems Forever. But yeah, it's just like they had three songs on their Pure Volume page, and it's the only place I could find them. I didn't like dive too deep into it, but
yeah.
I used to like earlier in 2015, I would go on that page and listen to those three songs all the time because I really enjoyed them. They're like a kind of a emo-y, you know, indie rockish kind of vibe to them. Just really good. But I don't know if it was because I was on mobile, but I tried to look them up on my phone to show someone recently and they wouldn't play.
Yeah.
So it might just because I'm on mobile, but because you said that.
No, man, I think you ran into the same thing I did. If you go to your if you go to your browser and do like the inspect thing and wait for the resource to load, it won't show up. It's really disappointing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna do that after we're done here. But that's such a bummer.
Yeah.
Because like you said, there's so much like all of this music is just going to be gone.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not opposed to finding those people on Facebook and then asking them for it. See if they have it because
yeah.
I reached out to the, there was a band. Oh my gosh. What was this band called? Dead Letter Society, I think, or Dead Letter something. It was the band that eventually became I Alaska.
Okay.
I don't know if I have that original name right, but there was a band that eventually became iAlaska.
Really?
And okay. Cameron Alexander and Roy
Ing. I have.
What's that?
No, I have an iAlaska record.
Yeah.
It's the yellow one with the elephant on it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I found it in like a dollar bin somewhere.
That's awesome. I love that band yeah. so much. And like,
But I didn't know they formed out of another band.
Oh, yeah. They were awful. They were terrible.
Oh, were they?
But I love it. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I like to like catalog. And, you know, now the singer of iAlaska, his name's Roy. Well, he's changed his name from Brandon Ronsky to Roy English. Not legally, I don't think, but that's his new, you know, that's his new performance name.
Okay.
And he's, you know, he's hanging out with like, you know, some B-list stars. Like he's up there. He's hanging out with really cool people in the studio and traveling all around the world. And, you know, wow. he's a cool guy. And there's this part of his past that he doesn't like. So I knew that I couldn't go to him for it. And I couldn't go to the guy that used to be his writing partner. He used to be in iAlaska, did a lot of his early solo stuff with him as a producer. He's now like a big EDM guy somewhere. I knew I couldn't go to him for this kind of stuff because they're just not going to give it to me. But I tracked down the bassist of that band. And he was happy to give it to me. So
really?
He handed over a whole bunch of tracks, a whole bunch of demos and shit that like he found on an old hard drive. And he's just like, here, have it. Glad you liked it.
That is so awesome. I love stories like that. You know?
Yeah.
I'm glad that he can still appreciate that.
There's a podcast concept in there somewhere. James and I have been kicking around some kind of similar concept, but I love talking about like the bands that were before other bands or like how a song was created. That's why I love demos. And there was a series, I think I can't remember if I did it at Under the Gun or at Substream, but I worked with the band on a feature where they essentially just sent me like a bunch of different cuts of the same song. And then just, you know, in between the SoundCloud embeds for that particular cut, they would explain how it went from that to the next thing because they were working remotely. So it was kind of a neat concept there. Living in like two different states or something like that. So they'd be sending files back and forth and you could kind of see how a song evolves without being in the studio because they weren't even in the studio. You know, so you're just kind of like observing this process and I love stuff like that. And I think today that would be an amazing podcast concept.
Definitely.
And I think that that's a great idea. I just don't have the time for it, but don't take it.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have shared that. You know, I don't care. No. Take the idea. If you do it, I would listen to it. I think that would be really cool to listen to.
No, I won't. You're good on my end. But no, I totally agree with you. Like, it just bums me out that, you know, those, I don't know, I guess I could say in a majority of those bands, maybe not as a whole, but members of those bands, you know, just want to keep that buried.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's just like the first band that comes to mind when it comes to my mind, when it comes to like leaked online demos of unfinished songs is Seosin. I mean, you just type in Seosin on YouTube and there's all these songs that are like kind of finished, almost finished.
Yeah.
Some songs with Tillian Pearson, you know, they're just completely random.
Oh man, I've got some of those.
Yeah. So they're all over the place.
Yeah. I've got Tillian demos for like three bands, and I know none of them are on YouTube yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd be interested in hearing those.
I'll have to track those down. I got a Tillian folder somewhere. He's sung for everybody That's at some awesome. Point.
Right? I will say real quick that the Dance Gavin Dance album that's coming out on Friday is my album of the year.
Oh.
So far.
Nice, man. I'm looking forward to listening to that. Jack was telling me you need to listen to this. I'm like, okay.
It's incredible. Like, it absolutely blew me away. It's unreal how good that record is.
I'm only hesitant to listen to that because I have this like weird animosity towards Dance Gavin Dance because they take up a lot of Cillian's time, which means he can't do more solo stuff.
Really?
And I love his solo stuff so much that it's all fine. Okay. I know everything he does is amazing, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Tillian albums and I want another one.
Fair enough. Yeah. I remember, does he have a song called Material Me?
That was the name of a record. I might've been a self-titled song too, but.
Okay. There's a song off that record that I absolutely love, but I've never been able to get in any other of his solo stuff.
I don't know if he like meant to have it public or if he shared it, but at some point I stumbled upon his SoundCloud account. This was years and years ago. And I still have copies of demos of like his entire first record.
Really?
Yeah, I pulled them all down because I'm that guy.
But... Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, there's so much you can find on the internet. You know, if you just type in a band name on YouTube and then put demo after it,
yeah,
something's gonna pop up.
Exactly. Well, we went really off cool. kind of far in the weeds there. I want to let's get back, because you recently left Alt Press. You were there for like 2.5 years. Like, as far as I knew, and you know, from my discussions with people who know you a little better than I, like, that was something you were always really working towards. So, you know, leading up to this week, what changed in your mind about working at Alt Press, and what eventually, you know, what made you leave?
Yeah, that's a good question. I love alternative press. Like, I lost sleep over that website. You know, I poured everything that I could into it. And you know, getting to work at the APMAs, I worked on site. I was with AP in 2014 for the first one, but I wasn't in Cleveland for them. But I did work on-site for 2015 and 2016, and it's just, like, the coolest thing that I've ever been able to be a part of. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was just a dream come true. Being able to work with Jason Pettigrew and Mike Shea and, you know, these people who I've been reading words from and looking up to since I was in middle school, you know, it's just been a dream come true, the whole thing. But, you know, we talk about getting burned out and stuff like that. And I wouldn't say that I was burned out, but, you know, without getting too personal into my life, it was just time to move on.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think it was a really big shock for me. I wasn't expecting to get it at all, to do anything like I did at AP, to even like run news on that website. So like when I started, it was just nonstop. I just did everything at any hour of the day or night to do it, to do what I could for it.
Right.
You know, to make that website better.
Now, was that you trying to like prove yourself to AP or like to yourself, like, putting out all that content? Like, obviously that wasn't the requirement. I'm sure you had like a limited number of posts, but it sounds like you were going way above and beyond.
Yeah. Maybe it was a little bit of both, but I think it was more of having the experience that I had at other websites and just like, I loved doing it to the point where it was mentally exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where it wasn't exactly the healthiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I know, like, I don't like to use this word, but like, it was basically an addiction. Mm. You know, I did it, and sometimes it would be a really good escape for me. Mm-hmm. You know, but other times it was just, I think it was it got to the point where it was just kind of too much.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, like, it does get stressful. I mean, I can rally with you there. It's a lot of pressure, and sometimes when, you know, your heart's not in, it's like, why am I doing this? You know, it's because it's tedious, and I think I follow you there.
Yeah, and I wanted to give that website 110%, 24 hours of the day, 7 days a week, and I like to think that I did that every day I was there, but it got to the point where, like, I just had to step away.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, for my own sake of, you know, mental health and all of that kind of stuff. But, and, like, they were just, you know, they were just the coolest about it. Mm-hmm. And they, the whole process was, everyone was understanding, and I love those people, past and present, so much. You will not find a more dedicated group of people than those who have worked at AP. Yeah. I mean, they're just, if you want to find a company that loves what they do more than, you know, like money or anything else, that is the company, because those people I mean, live and breathe alternative press. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. I mean, that has to be
And
true. They're running a magazine in 2016. You have to love it,
exactly.
right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just they're an amazing group of people, and it takes a unique person to do that. And I can't thank them enough for letting a 19-year-old, onto their website. But man, it's hard for me to unplug.
Right.
It's really hard for me. It's my last day was Friday,
Okay.
and yesterday I texted something over to my editor, Rob.
No. No.
Sorry. I can't not,
Yeah.
It's just in my blood now. And I don't know. I think it's always gonna be there at this point. It's just I needed a break from doing it 110%.
Yeah.
And if I'm ever gonna try something different, I'm still in college right now.
Yeah.
So I looked at it that way, and I was like, well, this is the
Yeah.
time.
Right. Before you're done
So
with college and you're like, well, I have a job. I really shouldn't quit it, right?
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm in a stable enough position right now to where I can go and try some different things out
Yeah.
and even put more on my resume. So, and try and like experiment with other stuff within the music industry.
Is there anything in particular that you're looking at doing now?
Yeah, so throughout my time at AP, I did just completely random sporadic PR for super low-level local bands,
Okay.
just to help them out.
Yeah.
I premiered a song with you at Substream for a band called Corkscrew back in like the fall of 2014, I
Hey, I
believe.
remember that.
Yeah, so that was. I was actually like, when I texted you, I was like, there's no way he's gonna say yes, but I had to try. And you were so cool about it, so I was like, I appreciated that so much.
That's good, man. I'm glad to help out. I mean,
Yeah.
I was totally open to new stuff at Substream because I wanted to try
Yeah.
new things. Like I felt like the online publication had kind of stagnated. It was really just a lot of content from the advertisers who were essentially asking us to plug these certain bands, and that you had to play that part of it. But I was like, well, you know what? I want to try to break new stuff too. And so when friends came along, they're like, hey, I'm working with this band. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. They're like, you don't want to listen to it? I'm like, I played 30 seconds. It's great. Let's do
Let's do it.
it.
That's awesome. Yeah, like I would go to that was the only Substream premiere I ever landed, so thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I think you know some
I
people there
did.
now, don't you?
Yeah, I know
There
Brian.
you go.
Yeah, he was a news poster with me at AP for a good while.
Yeah.
Him and John, those I mean they were fantastic to work with. That was really fun.
I now realize that I've had three alt press writers on the podcast so far. So that's
There
cool.
you go. Yeah. But yeah, like I would just premiere these songs for random bands and just random campaigns and stuff. I'm like the one on Substream, and then Under the Gun and Absolute Punk, and just try and see what that life was like pitching premieres and stuff, because I got pitch premieres
Right.
and stories ideas 24/7,
Yeah.
so I'm like, okay, well, I know what works and what doesn't. Let's see if I can
Exactly.
apply that.
Yeah, man, I was going to recommend that you listen to this podcast all the way through because it's essentially what we talk about in maybe every other episode, but it sounds like you already get that. Like coming from the press side of things is hugely beneficial to going into PR and just listening to the episodes with I don't know, with Nate and Josh, like you'll get some good tips because coming from the journalism side, you get to see a lot of different publicists' ways of going about things. And as you know, and as your like colleagues at the magazine know, there are certain ways to grab attention and to present the information in a way that'll make it easy for for you to do your job. So exactly. Having that knowledge would make that really easy. So I'm excited for you. I hope that you go in with an open mind and like really, really give it a good shot, because I think you'd be good at that. Yeah, you know, I see a lot of people who go from the journalism side into PR and do really, really well.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And it's just something, you know, I want to try out. And since I've been doing it for random bands, you know, I figure I'd try and do some slightly bigger stuff, see what that's like. And yeah, like honestly, when it comes down to it, if you're writing about music, you obviously like helping bands out. So
yeah,
what better way to do that than work directly with them and keep pushing them from the other side of things?
I think it's a natural step for a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. I can see where, you know, like as I've stepped away, even just over the past few days, just like, you know, seeing why some people would choose that as their next step makes sense to me.
It's usually editor or a publicist, or they quit entirely.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, like I have some other things that I, other projects that I'm working on, some other things that I'd like to do, at least in my personal life. Mm-hmm. Something that's kind of funny and kind of not at all. When I started writing, I stopped reading.
Interesting.
Like when I was growing up in like elementary school and middle school, I always had a book with me.
Yeah.
But when I started writing 24/7, I stopped reading.
Hmm.
So I'm definitely getting back. I've like, I'm maybe over the past, like, I don't know, 3 years.
Yeah.
I've like outside of school, you know, not something that I had to read, I've maybe read 2 books on my own. And like, I always used to read books. So that's definitely something I want to start doing again. Cause I have like all these books on my bookshelf. I recently cleared it out, but there's a bunch of stuff that I haven't read before that I've always wanted to and just never had the time. So I definitely want to be able to take more time out for myself. And like make myself take more time out for myself. Mm. And reading is definitely one of those things that I want to do a lot more. And I've always tossed this random idea around of like starting a, maybe like a WordPress or some sort of blog site just for short stories.
Okay.
Because I've always wanted to try out like just writing short stories for myself. I always loved reading them, you know, like it kind of fits in with that attention span. Kind of thing that we were talking about earlier. I just really like short stories. Like I enjoy long reads too, like massive books. or at least I did when I read them all the time back in the day. But I always loved, you know, 1 or 2 page thrillers that just leave you hanging, you know?
Yeah.
So I really like mystery novels and not like gory horror stuff, but, you know, stuff that makes you think.
I would recommend checking out Medium. I don't know if you have a Medium account or anything, but there are really cool communities there that focus on short stories. And if you publish there, they'll give like really good feedback and stuff like that. That's when I initially went onto Medium a couple of years ago. I'd spent a lot of time in there reading other people's stuff. And that's when I started drafting my own, and I hadn't published any of them, but it was like a really cool place to get like feedback and like see how like a good short story evolves when people are, you know, giving you good criticism and trying to make it better.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm definitely going to check that out. Yeah. Like it was when I thought about it, cause I thought about it while I was at AP and I was like, I'd really love to just like have a day to take out and just read like a book just front to back, you know?
Yeah. I was the same way, dude. Like all the way through high school I read, and then when I started blogging, like I found that I was still reading, but I wasn't reading books. I was reading articles all day long.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So I was like, you know, I would even read, you know, USA Today and news websites, you know, like world events websites and stuff like that. But it was never like sitting down, picking up a paperback book and just diving into some, you know, an actual storyline.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something I'd like to do. I'm catching up on my TV shows.
What are you watching?
Right now I've actually like, I've actually been in the process of starting House
Oh,
over.
good show.
Oh my gosh. I'm more of a TV show person than a movie person because I love to watch storylines evolve like that, in that way, as far as like visual media instead of like literature or stuff like that. But like that show makes me think so much. I love consuming things that make me think about the way people act and, why they do things. So House is the perfect show for
That is a good
that.
one. If you have access to it, watch The Newsroom. That also makes me feel that way. But be careful
Newsroom.
because it might make you want to write news again. I say maybe hold off for a
Oh
couple months and then watch
no.
The Newsroom because it's gonna amp you up.
Okay. All right. Maybe I needed that like while I was at AP, but no, I'll definitely look into that.
While we're on the
I
topic, though, I just want to mention really quickly that a friend of the show, Jana Chapman, had me on the pilot episode of her brand new podcast, Welcome to Geekdom, and we talked exclusively about television for about an hour and a half. So that went up today. I'll put a link in the show
Oh,
notes so
cool.
people can check that out.
Yeah, I'd love to check that out. Yeah, I'm a really big TV show person. I really enjoy that. My favorite show that's on air right now is NCIS.
Okay, we talked about
Yeah.
that.
Okay,
I don't
that's
watch it, but
awesome.
she does, like that, that
Oh.
serialized the cop sort of show.
Yep. And like I'm not usually into that kind of stuff, but those characters and those storylines, they have their individual cases for each episode, but their real personal relationships with each other is what keeps viewers coming back, and I love analyzing that and like my own head and stuff like that, and trying to predict what characters are going to do next. But my favorite show of all time was Heroes.
Heroes, dude.
That
I have a
was my
giant Hiro
favorite.
Nakamura poster at my dad's house. It was one of like the big
Oh, no
Got Milk
way.
posters that they put up in schools.
Yep.
I
Yep.
have one of those.
Oh,
I
I
wanted the
want
Hayden
one.
Panettiere one, but someone else got that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have the four seasons on DVD. I've probably watched it front to back three or four times. The comeback was underwhelming.
Yeah, I was
I
gonna
will
ask.
admit that, but it wasn't like people, when it comes to comebacks, I think people are expecting their own version of it, and you're never going to be able to please everyone with it. So I don't think it was as bad as people say it is, but it definitely wasn't as good as it could have been.
I'm still bummed out they never do that, like 2 hour finale that they said they were going to do. They're like, hey, look,
Right.
we're canceling the show. We're going to do a 2 hour finale that we all think you're really going to like. And then it just never happened.
It never happened. I
I
know.
used to race home from my Boy Scout meetings to watch this show.
I would race home from baseball practice because they would premiere on like Monday nights, and I'd have baseball practice right after school. And I couldn't drive, so mom would come pick me up, or dad. And dad and I always watched the show, so we were like, we gotta get home by like 8 or 7 or whenever it
Yeah.
was
I'm
on.
gonna have
But
to revisit that one. That was a good show.
oh, the storylines, like each character, it got a little outrageous at some points, but I loved hearing Tim, the creator of the show, talk about how they divvied up all their writers and they assigned like two characters to each group or whatever, and then they just kind of worked on their own groups. And then at the end, they kind of brought everyone together, and then they intertwined all the storylines back again.
That's interesting.
Yeah, like if I'm remembering that right, I think that's on the one of the bonus features on one of the DVDs that I have.
I'm sure
But
on the backup of my old PC hard drive from my parents' house, I have all of the old comics that I digitized. I like pulled them from the website and
oh,
put
did
them into
you?
PDFs and yeah.
See, I never, because I had dial-up back then,
So did I,
so I
man.
didn't.
It took forever.
Oh no, you went on there still. Yeah, I never even bothered with it, but I went out to Barnes and Noble and bought like this $40 hardback
So you
comic
got them
of
too.
Heroes.
Nice.
But I don't know if they're the same
I
ones.
think they
Like
probably
I would.
are. I'm
Okay.
or I wouldn't be surprised if like they're in there, but they like expanded on them more for like
Yeah.
the hardbacks or
Yeah.
the pulled, like just the standard issue copies. I'm not entirely sure, but they were good
Yeah.
comics too.
Yeah, they were. I really enjoyed them. I thought they were awesome. And I also have a book that's just about Hero and Charlie.
Hmm.
That was like, it was pretty good. I can't remember what it's called. I have it
I
somewhere,
don't know if I want to
but it
read
talked
that.
about,
My heart might break.
yeah. Yeah, if I remember right, it was about, because Hero goes back at some point and tries, like, they both go back, I think, maybe, and try and, like, save her because she has, like, something wrong. I think it was a brain aneurysm or
Yeah, it
something.
was something wrong with her brain.
Yeah. But he, like, goes back and it tells, like, this whole story of that probably took place within a matter of, like, 2 episodes in the show that they didn't talk about, but they wrote a whole book about it, which was, I thought was really cool.
That's neat. I like when a
But
show ends and like the creators still find a way to get the story out there somehow, because it doesn't have to be on
yeah.
TV. You can
Right.
tell that kind of stuff in, like an audio drama or a book or a graphic novel.
Right, definitely. Yeah. I just love that show so much. And I'm like, I love seeing or being able to pick out, like, AP scene references in there. Like, there's an episode of Heroes that plays Panic at the Disco's that song they wrote for, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank right now, but they wrote a song for that one movie.
Oh, Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, what was that
Was
song
that New
called?
Perspective?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's in a Heroes
That
episode.
song was a jam.
Right? It's so good. There's I saw episode one, no, episode 11, season one of House. They go into he has two of his assistants go into this one of their patients' houses, and they took down a picture off the wall, and the picture's a poster of Senses Fail's "Let It Enfold You."
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was awesome. I don't remember what season this one was from, but another episode of House, Tyson from the All American Rejects, is actually like
Yeah.
in the intro of an episode.
Yep. I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
There, I mean, of course, like for me, Scrubs is like a treasure trove of great like old emo bands.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
See,
I
I've
mean,
never.
say anything was in a They weren't in it, but like one of their songs was in like a really pivotal scene of that show.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never seen an episode of Scrubs before.
All right. Well, now that you're unemployed, you need to get onto the Scrubs train, but stop at season 8, okay? Don't watch the intern season. Season 8's as
No?
far as you need to go. I'm telling
Okay.
just listen to me, man.
All
I
right.
know what I'm talking
I'll take
about.
your word for it. But yeah, I either like shows that make me think or make me laugh. So I'm surprised I
Oh,
haven't
that
dove
one will
into
do
this.
both.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I haven't dove into that
It's
one yet,
a
but
heart-wrencher.
okay.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're watching a lot of TV. As far as like music goes though, is there anything you're like really into right now?
Yeah, like I'm still like I still even though I've only been gone for from AP for like 3 days, I'm still keeping a album of the year list, and I'm still, I unsubscribed to all my Twitter accounts and all those feeds, but the past few days I've been checking my RSS feeds at the end of the day
Yeah.
just to see, like what's happening, even in video games and movies and
Yeah.
TV shows
I'm glad
like
you
that
still
I
use
haven't
RSS because it makes me feel less bad. That's my
started.
thing at the end of the night. If I'm not reading like a book or a biography or something, I'm scrolling through my RSS feeds and catching up on the day.
Yep. Yeah. So I've been doing that. So I'm still keeping tabs on anything. I thought part of me truly believed I'd be able to unplug, but I just can't completely.
You'll
But
slowly find a pace. Like it takes
yeah.
time. It was the same for me. When
Yeah.
I decided that I wanted to pull back, I'm like, okay, the first step is getting rid of all the email from my phone. And that was a huge help because like email is what I was
Really?
looking at all the time. I was constantly looking at publicists' emails and, trying to like, anybody sending scoops or like anything. I was constantly looking at emails and drafting posts. So removing any apps that I could use to post content to WordPress and removing email, like all email, even personal email from my phone, like it did wonders for me. Just anything that like took my attention away from life and brought it back to the music industry, it had to go. Just I had to cut it out all at once. That way, when the time came that I was like, okay, well, I'm still interested in this, I could figure out exactly what it was that I was interested in, and it wasn't just like that mind trick of like, what am I supposed to be looking at right now?
Yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to for me to see how, because right now it's just like, you know, I can't step away, so I got to do something. So
Well,
I've got a few things that I'm working on, and you know, keeping me grounded and whatnot. But
that's good.
yeah, I'm still paying attention to you know, songs that are coming out and albums. I have a working list right now of my, I usually do a top 20 best albums of the year list. I'll like post it on Facebook and link it on my Twitter. But so right now I have like 14, I think. First one is Dance Gavin Dance. Like I said before, unreal. Like I'm just blown away by how good that album is. I didn't like Acceptance Speech, which was the first album with Tillian. It took me a minute. I didn't like it at first, but I can't even remember what the next album is. I'm drawing another blank after that. But their most recent album before the new one that's coming out took me a minute to get into it, but I fell in love with it after a while. And this album right off the bat, so good. So definitely listen to Mothership when it comes out on Friday.
I will.
My second one, Panic at the Disco's Death of a Bachelor. I love it.
Interesting.
So good. Brendan's just a, that band is happening all over again, you
Is it a
know?
band though? That this is a this could go on for a whole nother hour,
Oh
so maybe I shouldn't ask,
boy.
but you know, it's something that I've been thinking about for the past few years as, you know, every member of Panic at the Disco has left. To me, it seems that at least for the past two records, I think Too Weird and Death of the Bachelor, they are very much to me Brendon Urie solo records, which isn't a bad thing because I think he's stronger than he's ever been. But it feels weird to market it under the Panic of the Disco moniker because that band used to be so much more than just Brendon.
Agreed. But then he's never gonna change that
I
name.
know, like from a
It's
marketing
so
perspective,
established.
especially after this I think this example really puts into perspective with the, you know, the people that agree with me. I honestly and truly believe that if Patrick Stump would have done well with his solo endeavor during the Fall Out Boy hiatus, Brendon easily could have split off on his own. But because Patrick's stuff didn't go over that well, and because of his, you know, his reaction to that sort of criticism at the time, I'm almost positive the label is just like, nope, not doing that again. You are Panic at the Disco until we're done with our contract, and then you can do whatever you want. But as long as you're working with us, you are Panic. So I think even
That's
if you wanted to do anything else, I don't think marketing wise the label would have allowed it.
right. Yeah, I agree with that. But that's an interesting perspective that I hadn't thought about. But dude, the new, like, first week, I can't remember exactly what it did, but it did 100,000 something first week. And the venues that they're playing on their this next tour coming up, I mean, they're like the same size as Fall Out Boy venues. So, I mean, that band is happening all over again, and it's fantastic. I love that record.
That's good.
My third would be is a band called Knocked Loose. They released a record called Laugh Tracks. And they are, despite what some people will tell you, they're like a metallic hardcore band. They signed to Pure Noise, and this is their first full length, and the hype around them is just unreal. There's just, it's just so crazy how much kids are gravitating towards this band right now,
I'll check
and they're
that out.
blowing up because of it. Yeah, definitely. It's heavy, like it's pretty heavy, but I really enjoy it. And then I'll just do the rest of my top five. Right now, I have Angel Dust at number four. I don't know if you've ever listened to them before. Their vocalist, I hope I have this right. Their vocalist is the vocalist for Trapped Under Ice. And they, it's kind of like them, Angel Dust and Turnstile both have members from Trapped Under Ice. And I think right now, Angel Dust actually might have a member playing with them from Turnover. I'm not 100% sure on that. I feel like a lot of those lineups are kind of constantly rotating a little bit. But their new record, Rock the F On Forever, it's like so cheesy, but it's just rips. Like, I just, it's just a fun record to, it's just a fun punk record to listen to for me. I really like it. And then the next few that I have are Era, their new record's incredible, Norma Jean, Seosin, and Silent Planet.
Silent Planet, cool.
Definitely, like, oh, that band. That band is going places.
Yeah, they've been rising up, and it's cool to, I normally wouldn't follow them, but my friend Jonathan Kemp often tours with them as their photographer, so.
Yeah.
I got to meet him at Bloodfest, too, same day.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. It, oh, my gosh, they're just the nicest people in that band, and, you know, I can't remember what the Night God Slept did first week, but I think it was like 600 maybe, or maybe it was 300, and then the new album did 6,900 first week this summer. I mean, that's that awesome. Band is happening.
Well, that's good. Did you see their recent merchandise push after their van break-in?
After their van break, yeah.
They have like van awesome. Break-in shirts. It's amazing.
The best way to go about that, you know?
Yeah.
That was, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, they're cool. Well, I've been listening to, there's this band called Nothing Nowhere, and Dana, previous guest of this show, she recommended one of their tracks. So there's a, I don't know if it's a single or an EP called Bummer that's really good. They were not what I was expecting. I was expecting something more like kind of straightforward emo, you know, just based on the album artwork, but they have like this really interesting R&B vibe. It's unreal. Okay. Like I can't even really describe it because they're unlike anything I've ever heard before. It kind of reminds me of Pine Grove in a way, because Pine Grove brings in these like country folk influences into a genre that I really enjoy. And I think that Nothing Nowhere is doing sort of the same thing. So that's a really good thing to check out. Been listening to quite a bit of that lately. They have a ton of singles, and I think they put out a new EP or record sometime this year. Then my boys Dead Leaves from Cleveland, formerly known as Call It Fiction, they put out an amazing record a year or two ago that I think went way underlooked. Honestly, I think they should have been like I think they did shop it around. I don't know if they, you know, got any response or any interest or anything. They ended up putting it out on Take This to Heart Records, but it could have easily been one of the headlining records from Pure Noise or Top Shelf this year. Like it's still current. I was listening to it the other day. It's amazing. Alex sent over a track from the new record and it's huge. It's fucking massive. And anybody who likes the Hotelier or, you know, anything kind of in that vein, like that really, the really honest and earnest, big kind of, I don't even know, what are we calling it now? I guess it's emo, you know, it's not really punk, but it's, you know, it's like that emo stuff, but like the vocals are huge and there's a ton of instrumental layers to it. It's like, it's unlike anything that I've heard in the past few years. I really think it's going to be a big thing. And A&Rs, if I have any A&R listening to this, they, like, I honestly encourage you to seek these guys out, ask for some demos, see, you know, see what I'm talking about, because you're going to want this. Okay. When you're listening to this a couple years from now and you're, you know, you're thinking, oh shoot, I could have been on that train. Just listen. Okay. That's what you want. Apart from that though, I've been listening to a new podcast called Mega Maker. It's the Mega Maker podcast. It's, I think it started in January, sometime earlier this year, and it's hosted by a guy named Justin, and he is working on this this ongoing project to make 100 things in a year. And, you know, kind of like what I talked about in the last miniature episode, you know, motivation is kind of hard, so he's really great at kind of like influencing me and, you know, inspiring me to keep creating and keep doing something. I'm not looking to do as much as he's doing this year, but it's definitely motivational and it's really cool to see his community growing and like how he's able to inspire so many people to make so many really cool things. And he talks about a bunch of them on the show and it's really neat. So if you're into that, it's really cool. Each episode's like, it's usually shorter than 15 minutes, so it's a really easy listen if you're, you know, just like getting ready for the day or something. It's a good pick me up. So, as far as recommendations go, I think that's all I got this week. But
cool,
yeah. But thanks for being on the show, man. Like, this has been great.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I feel like you and I have a lot in common when it comes to, you know, our blogging experiences and whatnot. And
Yeah.
no, like I was trying to think back earlier, you know, what my first encounter was with you on the internet. And I'm sure it was just like I saw your name on Under the Gun or something like that. It's actually funny. I can't find it right. I haven't been able to find it, but I actually applied to write it Under the
Did
Gun
you?
after Mind Equals Blown.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was just like in like I just sent a random kind of email and I think I sent it to Brian.
Yeah, he would have been the one
I
receiving it at
think
that time. I think
yeah.
I was kind
Okay.
of on my way out in 2013.
Okay. Yeah. So I was trying to think back at like what my first encounter
You were
was with
probably
you, but it
blocking
was
me on Twitter or something.
and yeah, probably. I think you stuck up for me a few times on Twitter for some I don't even remember what stories it was, but some
Wait,
people
let me
were
guess.
talking about.
You posted something in Alternative Press and didn't give credit to a different blog because they had it first, even though you got the same press release they did. Something like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
Yep.
that's a common
Stuff
story.
like that.
I would have been on the other side, but I, you know, the Alternative Press people have been really good to me for a very long time. Mike Shea was one of the first people I met in this industry, and he offered me a job out of high school, and I didn't take it. And to this day, I don't regret it because I feel that if I would have, I probably would have ruined my relationship with Mike. I would have been a lot more sour towards Alternative Press, and I definitely would not have continued to work in this industry if I would have burned that bridge, because Mike and Jason have been ongoing sources of inspiration, and they're, you know, they're really respectable guys who really push me and show me a lot of respect, and over the years that's really meant a lot. So great people there, and I'm always down to defend because I totally appreciate everything that Alternative Press has done for our scene and for the scene in my state in particular.
Yeah.
They are local to my
Yeah.
scene, which has always been really nice. It's cool to see those guys at shows. In fact, I was just at a show that I wasn't going to go to on my own, but my buddy had an extra ticket, and even though I had a slight concussion that day, I decided to go.
Oh, no.
And it was fun. I think the opening band was the best band. This is a band called Creeper, and turns out Cassie was there, but I didn't see her.
She
So
loves Creeper.
yeah.
She's a big Creeper
So I've
fan.
heard. She's
Yeah.
probably one of the ones I saw jumping around up front. But I was
That's
hanging
awesome.
back at the bar. So it's cool to see those guys
That's awesome.
around, and it's cool to
Yeah.
talk to you
And
tonight,
like,
even though you're a little more remote.
yeah, thank you so much for having me on. And like, you know, with I hear, you know, everyone talks about how bad AP is today and how much, you know, when I was there and how much it changed over those few years to the content that it produces now. And you know, like, it's just this music scene that you and I come from and are currently in and associate with, you know, it's such a better place because of that magazine and having that magazine in it and having the APMAs go on
Yeah.
every year. Like, I don't think people realize how important and how much it helps bands.
I really think that's
So.
true. I mean, I honestly, the scene wouldn't be as big as it is today without Alternative Press, without Warped Tour. Like, those two institutions have really put alternative music, like the kind that we listen to, on the map in a big way, so that it's not just underground, it's popular. You know, it used to be an underground
Exactly.
rag, and sure, it was in high fidelity. You could see some really great shots of Alternative Press in high fidelity, but you know, since
Yep.
then it's in Barnes and Noble, and that's where the kids are having coffee. So
Right.
you know, it's a
Yeah.
big deal. And I think, you know, even though the APMAs have a couple hiccups, you know, a
Hey.
couple glitches,
Yep.
there's still a ton of
Yep.
preparation that goes into that, a ton of work, and you got to respect the team for that, because that's a hard thing to put together. And
It is
when you're
both.
reading through the magazine and you see things like, you know, reviews that are overly positive, you know, like 5-star reviews for something that's probably not worth 5 stars, you have to keep in mind that running a magazine in 2016 is really difficult, and there are ad dollars, and those ad dollars come from somewhere, and you don't want to burn those bridges. I know some
Yeah.
friends who recently took up positions at another magazine that talks about other bands that are kind of similar. might even be in the same general region of the Midwest, and they're finding out those things for themselves. All those complaints that they had are now things they have to deal with on a daily basis. So that stuff's rough, but it's great that Alternative Press has been able to kick it for as long as they have. And I'm sure you're very appreciative of your time there, and you'll go on to do great things from there.
Yeah. Those people were so good to me. And like, they didn't really have, like, I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 21, you know? I was 19 when they brought me on. Like, I still can't believe that that even happened and they put that much faith in me to be able to just kind of go for it and do it. And, you know, it changed a lot while I was there, and, you know, they were 100% supportive throughout the whole thing. And, you know, being able to work from them and learn from Jason and Cassie and even work with the new people that they've brought on, like Mackenzie and Rabab and, you know, everyone. It's just been an awesome experience to be able to learn from everyone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been, like I said, I've been reading that magazine since I was in middle school, and to be able to learn from those people and see how all of it works is just, I've learned so much more working from Alternative Press than I ever had in a classroom.
Yeah, that's good, that means you had a good time there. Yeah, that was a good job.
Oh, it was fantastic, and I wouldn't trade any of that for the world, and it was a dream come true, for sure.
All right, well, that's it for this episode of Variable Bitrate. I want to thank Tyler again for joining me. You can find the show on Twitter as VBRFM. I'm Jacob Tender, and Tyler is at TylerMEB. Still got that handle on there, don't you?
I haven't changed it yet, you know. I've talked to a few people about that, but it's just kind of there for now.
Well, for now, you can find him as TylerMEB. The show notes can be found at curbside.audio/BBR/16 or in the podcast player that you're probably listening to the show in right now. I use Overcast, so if you're in there, hit the recommend button. It helps out the show. Thanks always for listening, and we'll catch you next time.